I'd like you to talk a little bit about what you used to think about and dream about, and what kind of goals you used to set for yourself.
Well,
a little bit of that.
Same as any young fella, you haven't got anything definite in mind. Your mind wanders. You want to be here, you want to be there. When I was a young fella, I'd like to go out west, you know, see what the cowboys are, and go prospecting, and but I never had any particular trade in mind. I didn't know what I was going to be, except when I started to work in Stafford. I told you that I went and got the, some books from school to study. I was going to be a doctor, but I gave that up after a while. And I wanted to study radio, and I told you about how I worked in the radio shop and all that. And then I didn't tell you about the time that before I went to New York. Yes, I got a job in Warrenville. To work on the town hall. We heard that they were going to build a town hall there. So I went down there and I got a job there. And my brother Peter too. And we started with pick and shovel to dig the trench where they were going to put the concrete foundation. And that was murder. Because if you take the pick and you would hit it, it'd go through a little bit of dirt and go bunk. You hit stone and stone. And we had blisters and calluses. So Peter worked there. I don't know whether he worked a week or two, and he finally had to give up. Because he was quite a bit younger than me, and it was too heavy for him, so Mother told him to leave it. But Father went down, and he got a job there. And Father used to mix the concrete, you know, with the concrete mixer. That was his job. And we started digging the trench for the foundation, and when it was ready, then they started, mix the concrete. And us men that were on pick and shovel digging a trench there, then our next job was to push the wheelbarrow full of concrete and pull into these forms. So Father used to tend the mixer and mix the concrete for us, and we used to pull it in there. When that was finished, when the foundation was laid, then I forgot the man, Hungarian's name, but he was a church builder. And he, you know, could lay stone and everything else. So he taught, I think there were 13 of us men. I was one of them. He taught us how to lay stone. And so I became a stonemason then. I had to buy a level, 4 foot long level, trowel and all that. And Mr. Schumann, he was another one that was, Schumann that I mentioned. The Schumanns, they lived from our house about halfway to Westford. On the right hand side is the yellow house up on the bank there. Well, Mr. Schumann worked there, and there's farmers from around there. And so for 3 months we were laying that stone, the hall. It took 3 months, us 13 men. And we have a picture of the hall and the men that build it. And so I started digging the foundation. I helped to put up the walls, you know, working right around the scaffold and the roof. And the roof is concrete with copper on top of it. A Jew from New York did a copper work, and he even made a big cross for our church. You know, the cross must have been about maybe 2.5-3 feet tall, out of copper. He made it for the priest. And I gave it to him. And so us men, we worked there. And then when we got the hall filled, then we had to work on it inside. And one job was the basement. We had to make waterproof because that's where the records would go, in the vault and all that. And after it was leveled off, the concrete floor was laid, and the walls were concreted, then we had to waterproof the floor and the walls. We had to waterproof the floor up to about 4 or 5 feet high. And this Hungarian, he'd get a bucket of hot tar, and I'd just take the tar paper, and I would hold the tar paper, and he started, and I would pull it up. He'd keep pouring tar back in the paper, I'll smooth it up like that. And I had on gloves. You know, they had like a I don't know what you call them, gauntlet or what,
yeah,
on the gloves. And one day he slipped, and he filled up on my left glove. He filled for the hot tar. Imagine that. Filled it up. I screamed and I yanked it off, but my hand was all covered with black tar. So they took me home, and my mother, she took some cream. I don't know where they got the idea. And she got some cream, and she just daubed it all on my hand and bandaged it up. You know that, that my hand healed and took all the tar off. Isn't that a miracle?
That is.
And the man that done it, his name was Kish, short Hungarian. Now, I don't remember whether I got paid, you know, it's an accident on a job. I don't know whether they had compensation in those days. But I couldn't work for a while. But then I went back afterwards. And then I helped to lay the hollow tile. After the walls were put up, then inside there was this square tile. It was about that wide, that high, and about that thick of tile. That was so you have airspace between inside and outside for insulation. And but then I didn't work on the finishing part, you know, floors and all that. I didn't work on that. But I worked from the foundation, digging the trench to the roof and more after. And Father, when we were laying stone already, he didn't need the concrete mixer except for making mortar, see? And when we needed mortar, we'd holler, "Mud!" And Father would take a wheelbarrow and put mortar in it, and he'd take it and he'd take it over to the elevator. There was an elevator made. There's a gas engine there to you know, raise it up and down. And there was the framework made for an elevator to go up 3 or 4 flights. And it was funny. People, the men around there used to laugh, and I did too. And there was a short Indian there, and Father. And Father always wore a soft felt hat. And this Indian, when he'd take a load of mud, you know, or stone, he'd go there, and as you go to the elevator, there was this, the part of the framework, you know, that holds up the elevator. You had, if it was too tall, you had to duck under it. But this Indian, he was short, and he came over, and he ducked under it every time, see? And Father, he's over 6 feet. He just came over there, he just walked straight. I guess there was about a quarter inch space above his hat, but he never hit it. So they used to add this, "Hey, Walt, look at your father, see? He don't duck on that little runt," the Indian used to call him. He ducked every time. That was funny. But this Indian used to haul, you know, stone, because the stone came from the neighboring farms. The farmers, I guess they got paid for the stone, or maybe they donated, I don't know. But anyhow, each of us had his own tub for the motor. The tub was made out of wood, just like on a square with a tapered sides. So, and you had a taper on the scaffold as we were going up. The tub was in back here alongside of it. That's where you used to pile the stone. When you want stone, they bring you a load of stone. All you had a hauler, just what you want, stone or mud. You didn't wait till you was finished. You waited when you was about halfway through. And they'd replenish it, see? So you keep going around and around. And father was taking care of the mud. And I think the Indian was taking care of the stone, because there's 13 men to keep going, see? And then there was trucks bringing the stone. I don't know where they got it from, but when somebody needed stone, you just haul stone and you got it. And then after when was finished, when the stone work was finished and we were working inside, father used to point. See, originally concrete is gray, isn't it? But it, if you look at the hall there, you notice that it's the stones stand out because there's black pointing. That black pointing, they took carbon black and put it into the lime, I guess, see? And he was going around doing the fancy work, all that. And then it, where there was too much, somebody got accidentally got some cement on the stone, why he had to clean that up, I think, with a chisel and an acid, see? And so we worked there for quite a while.
Let's skip up to when you met Mom.
Oh, well, let's see. Oh, that's about one third of the way. Well, I'll tell you how I met Mother. I worked in New York City, and so did Mother. And Mother's relatives, relatives and friends from Virginia, they also lived downtown. And I lived on Washington Street at that time. And it happened that a lot of the people that knew Madeline knew me. And in fact, they knew. So, I was working on radio in Jersey City, and Mom was doing housework in New York City for some people named Glucksman. The people I knew, I went visiting them, and on the mantelpiece, they had photographs, and I was looking at them, and I asked them, "Who's that girl?" I says, "That's the girl I like to meet, see?" And that was Mom's, what do you call it? Honey? Tessie's your cousin, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I saw the photograph on the shelf.
You didn't see it there.
Oh, where is that? Andrew's at.
Okay. Detroit. And he came back and he went to visit his friend Andrew Hrushnan. And Andrew was a husband to Olga, and Olga was a sister to my cousin Tessie's husband, Adam. So when Walter came there and he saw their wedding picture, they got married while Walter was at Hrashna, and Olga got married when Walter was in Detroit, and I was their bridesmaid, and Helen Schneider, the two of us. Huh. And he saw the picture and he wanted to know who that girl was, which was me. And so one day I'm going on my day off, I'm going on Park Row where they had men's clothes, and on my days off I used to come to Cousin Tessie's. I would spend a day there. And I'm on my way there and I'm looking for a store to buy this coat for my brother. And who do I meet but Olga and Tessie? This is Hrashna's wife and my cousin Tessie. And they said, "Oh, you're just the girl we're looking for." I says, "Why, what's up?" She says, "Well, Walter's back from Detroit and he saw your picture and he wants to meet you." I said, "Ho, ho." I said, "I met him 5 years ago. He didn't even give me a tumble. And he had these other girlfriends that I always used to get the story about him, you know, that he was going with this girl. And the reason he went to Detroit, because this girl, Gisela, jilted him. She got another boyfriend and she got married. And he was so heartbroken, he was so in love with her, he went to Detroit to forget her." And so anyway, he came back and so I said, "Ho." I says, "Now he's now he wants to meet me." And because even when he was in Detroit, a cousin of Adam's, where Pop used to board at when I was in New York and he was there, Pop used to board there, and he used to come to Tessie's, and he used to always tell me about Walter. You know, "Well," he says, "that nice fellow Walter, you just have to get together and you have to meet him. He would make a good husband for you." And I says, "Oh, Strichko," you know, that's like uncle, I would say, "I got a lot of time yet. I'm still young and I you know, I don't want to get married yet." He says, "Well, you know that." But anyway, there was always this that I was supposed to, you know, go. And then I was a bridesmaid at another wedding, a cousin, my father's cousin. His name was, I forget now. But anyway, he was a Bulichick. And I was a bridesmaid there. And Pop came to that wedding. And at that time, he had an eye on another girl. Her name was Albina.
Oh, yeah.
See, now I knew all about these girls, but they always wanted me to, but I was just a little hick from Virginia, you know. He couldn't see me for, and anyway, Pop was, 8, 9 years older than me. So, I mean, I was a kid where he was for these older girls. And I went to this wedding, and there was a fight. And there was Pop refereeing these guys.
I broke up the fight.
And at that wedding, somebody else came to me, and they said, "Gee, you have to meet this Walter." I says, "Well, he's there, but he don't see me, and I'm a bridesmaid." So, you see, he just didn't have, I didn't have an appeal to him. But here, he sees me on a picture. And he wanted to meet me. So anyway, they said, "Well, Walter wants to meet you." I says, "Well, I'll meet the guy." But I says, I'm not. What do you call it?
You don't have to get married.
I don't want to get married yet, I said. Because they said, "Oh, he'll, like, you know, he wants to get married." I said, "Well, I don't want to get married. I still have so many years to pay on my
loan.
I was doing this, it's like a saving loan, and you pay so much in it, and when it's paid, I was supposed to pay $799, and I would have had $1,000. And I'll meet him. So they made a date that he came to Cousin Tessie's, and I was to come there, you know, I had my day off, and we had a date, you know. So I came there, and I had this new dress that I had bought when I went to Virginia, because see, this was like in January, and I was in Virginia for Christmas, and we came to, you know, I came to Tessie's, and he wasn't there yet, but anyway, he came, and we went mad, and he took me out to see the Virginian,
That's the first picture.
That was a movie, The Virginian.
Oh, we saw that when we got married.
No, this was The Virginian.
Oh, well, that's right, The Virginian.
We went to see The Virginian. The thing was, the fella was from Virginia, which was Gary Cooper.
Gary Cooper.
And the girl was from Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't that
yeah.
a strange? So we went to the movie, and he took me home, you know, to where I worked. And he wanted to kiss me right away. I says, oh, no. I says, I don't do that. I'm not that kind of a girl to kiss a fellow on my first date. So then it started, and
it was in
but
the
then I have to tell you, we were going out maybe about 3 times, and he wanted me to meet Rudy. He was married, and they lived in the Bronx with Ann. So he wanted me to go over there, you know, to meet them. So they had me to come over on a Sunday for dinner. And Rudy was very, you know, very nice. And I was very shy, you know, going to meet these strange people, you know, like to be. But Ann was so cool. I just felt like I wasn't, you know, like she didn't care. See, I worked as a servant girl, you know, and I maybe that was below their, you know, they figured, who's this girl working as a servant girl? And I'm never ashamed of it, that I was, because I worked there for 5 years for these same people. They liked me as a family.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I was there, and he took me home. And you know that after, he didn't call me for a date for a whole month. He never called me up. Well, I was the most broken-hearted person you ever... I cried till Mrs. Glucksman said, Madeline, no man is worth that. Imagine that, how he could do that. I mean, it was just obvious that they didn't approve of me. And he listened. So I thought, well, maybe he isn't. Why should I cry for somebody like that?
Well, you forgot about something, dear. Shortly after I took her up to meet Rudy, you know, it happened that I won $3,000 on a ticket. I bought a ticket for 50 cents. A fellow sold it to me where I worked. The name it was The Lucky Day, and it was based on a treasury balance. The last five figures in newspaper, and it came up. When I got the slip, what it was, I had the slip in my hand, look at it, it says 3-3-8-8-1-1-3-3-8-8. Bingo, I got it! $3,000. So I went over to the fellow that sold me the ticket, and I showed it to him, and then, all right, he made the arrangements where I was supposed to go and collect, see? And Rudolph says, we better play it safe. See, they might get giving me the money, and when I walk out, hit me on the head and all that. So had Rudy help to handle the deal with me. But Rudy, he hired another bank guard to be back a few feet further like that, and just in case anything happened, he'd pitch in, see? And Rudy paid him $25 for that. And so we're supposed to go to a certain hotel, a certain room, and that's where they count the money out to me. So I forgot what bank it was, but we went to this hotel and to the room there, and when we came there was two fellas there, and we waited a while, and then two more fellas came with they just had a little briefcase, see, and walked in, and he laid count out the money, $3,000 on a bench in cash, on the table. So I we took it, and then I deposited the money in the bank. I gave Rudy, you know, I gave him, I think I gave him $300, $350, something like that, for helping me out. And then I put the rest of the money in the bank, but just so I didn't know what bank to put the money in, I put it in the first bank we could come to.
Uh-huh.
So I told him this is just for a short term, see? So all right, but I think I had to pay about $1.50 or something like that just for handling the paperwork for a few days. No interest on $3,000, but...
But anyway, don't you think that that wasn't an excuse, that he could have called up and said, I have things
sure.
that are holding me back, I can't, you know?
I didn't see anybody.
Did Rudy and Ann tell...
Yeah, he wouldn't have admitted, but...
No, nobody did. Mom always thinks so, but nobody...
Well, then why didn't you?
Huh?
Why didn't you?
It wasn't him, because it was Mr. Jacob that wanted to match me up with his daughter.
Yeah, but still, they must have said something,
and
because
Mr.
it was right after...
And Mrs. Falkovich, as Ann's mother...
It's still,
she
was
said,
right after that. It was right after that we went there, and you never called back for a whole month.
Okay.
All right, well, that's water over the dam now.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, it was in the books, because so many people said that we should get together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it just happened. And this gypsy that Mother says, that I really was in love with her. She was a beautiful girl, but she was gypsy.
Mm-hmm. Gisela, or?
Yeah, Sobok. Gisela, Gisela Mihok, and she talks Slovak just like we talk Slovak, and she worked right amongst her people. Only was, the thing was that she was gypsy.
She was real gypsy.
So you would have been half gypsy.
God great.
Yeah.
How did you meet a gypsy?
Huh?
How did you meet a gypsy?
Because the girls, you know...
Oh,
you
boy,
know.
Olga really had a bunch of cronies, huh?
Yeah. And, well, anyhow, let's see, did I put that on? Yeah, that's still going. All right, now, we're back in Connecticut.
Well,
about the courtship,
mm-hmm.
when we had a date there, we used to take a bus ride up Fifth Avenue.
It was
winter time, and we were sitting up on top deck there, but dressed pretty warm, we didn't mind it. So I remember whether he did once or twice, but we went from one end of the ride to the as far as the bus went, and then turn around, go down the same bus the other way to the starting point. You know, just ride back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
What was it, 10 cents then, dear?
I don't know.
Yeah. And then once we were on the bus there, and I told the mom that, the company that I work for, they're moving to Connecticut. They're building a new factory, see? And up in East Hartford, Connecticut, that's near where my parents live. So they asked everybody who wants to go. So the boss asked me if I wanted to go. I says, yeah, sure. I says, that's going up towards home. So the company gave the single men $25 to go over there, move over there, and married men got $50. So I got $25 to go closer to home. And then I told that to Mom, the factory's moving up there. So she says, well, are you going too? I says, yes. Then,
the way he put it, he says, how would you like to come up to live with me up there? I said, what kind of a girl do you think I am? So then
I said, I didn't know whether you'd like it up there or not.
so then I don't think he was intending to ask me to marry him then, but he just, it had to come out. He says, well, I thought that I would like you to marry me.
And then before we even got married, or just before, as we were ready to get married, I was living in East Hartford at what they call Church Corners. As you cross the bridge from Hartford to East Hartford, the avenue comes to the, like a dead end, you go left or right, see? And there was a house just maybe a couple hundred feet from the corner. I moved there, so when we were ready to get married, I told Mom that she could send her trunk over there, which she did. And when the trunk came over there, and I think it was in, on the second floor, wasn't it there?
Yeah.
Yeah, second floor. And so we went to Virginia and got married, and after the wedding we stayed at that place in Church Corners until we could find an apartment, and we found it on 16 Blinn Street, which is to the right, crossing what do you call, it's south of Church Corners, Blinn Street is. But now I don't think there's any more Blinn Street because they built new bridge through, I think, through there. And we moved on to the second floor there. And the landlord's name was Tozzi, T-O-C-I. He was always singing. And we were there, oh, I don't know how long. Then we moved to Manchester. In Manchester we lived at, let's see, 1, 2, 3.
Your lunch is getting cold.
All right.